Hey everyone, it's Mary Lou Tyler. I actually met Supeep, who's the guest on today's show, a long time ago. I think it was probably 4 or 5 years ago. I saw her speak at an event and I was mesmerized. So I wanted to get right into this conversation with her. Supeep is featured pretty much everywhere, but she's in Forbes and Entrepreneur Magazine. She's the author of this wonderful book called Step Into the Spotlight, A Guide to Getting Noticed. She's a former lawyer and a Canadian, and she has just a wonderful viewpoint on getting yourself noticed. So I asked her on the show today. Without further ado, welcome, Supeep, to the show.
My pleasure. I'm glad to be here.
So this is just an amazing opportunity. I really resonated with me when I listened to, I think it was a few years ago, it was about speaking, but it was your 12 mistakes, speaking mistakes. And one of them just really totally got me. And that was the, I think it was mistake number 3, which is the 30 seconds in the spotlight, not knowing what to say.
Ah, yeah.
And my audience, even though I'm a process expert and I work at top of funnel, we're trying to get conversations boiled up to the top so people can start these conversations. But almost overwhelmingly, the questions I get from people of what do I say when I get somebody on the phone? How do I present myself? What's the first thing I should say to them? So when I heard you talk about that, and I think you said you created over 100 different, I call them openers. I think you called them mini shows.
Here they tend to call them networking infomercials, or I think of them really like a mini show. You're right.
Yeah. So when I heard that, I thought, oh my goodness, I've got to get you on this show so you could talk to us about, you know, how do we get ourselves noticed when in such a busy world, we spend all this time and money trying to get people to start to engage with us. And then we bungle it in those first 30 seconds on the phone.
Well, Yeah. It's true. I don't remember if you read my intro or not, just to tell them sort of my background, but I was a lawyer for many years and a litigation lawyer. And in that world, there was a certain way of speaking, right? You have to be professional, quote unquote, right? After about 10 years of being a litigation lawyer, I left law for the limelight. To be a singer, actress, and stand-up comedian. And wow. I realized that I had learned some stuff that people in business just don't know. You know, and people in business think it's about being great at what you do. Being great at what you do gets you to ground zero. I mean, it's important. It's essential. I'm not saying you shouldn't be great at what you do. But if you think that's going to get you clients, not so much, you know, because there's a zillion other people who are great at what you do. And right. Maybe they're even greater than you at it. But you know what? Being the best at what you do is not really what gets you clients. But
that's
being
true.
Being able to attract people is what gets you at least the to the top of your funnel, right? At least to the stage where you can discuss what it is you have and what it is they want. So on discovering this, I started coaching people on what to say, and it ended up, you talk about the 30 seconds, I actually teach a 4-week course on what to say in 30 seconds. Can you imagine? And I could have made it a 10-week course because there's just so much. And where you start is, you start with, it depends who you're talking to, obviously, but it's you have to start with color, right? You have to start with flavor. You have to start with story. You have to start with why are you doing this? Why are you doing what you're doing? And by that, I don't mean stand up at a networking meeting and say, you know, I'm a life coach because I'm really passionate about helping women break through the barriers. Okay, because that's, you can go to any 7 a.m. networking meeting, you know, those rubber egg board of trade events and hear 95 life coaches say that. And then you'll hear, you know, 17 business coaches say, you know, I'll help you break through the barriers and make a transformation and, you know, get massive income. And then you'll hear the financial experts tell you about what they, and it's all the same. It's all the same. And we filter it out and we don't hear it. So a realtor will stand up and say, you know, now's a really good time to buy or sell a house because mortgage rates are low. We don't even hear that. We don't even hear that. You know, and they think they're being so impressive and they're not. So how do you cut through that? You have to tell a story, right? You have to figure out who you are and what is interesting about you? And that's why I was saying, you know, about my background before I wanted to answer this question, because once people know that, you know, I was a litigation lawyer, I had 4 kids in 4 years, I left that to perform, I have a music CD out, I've done stand-up comedy on national TV, I wrote a book. Once they know some of that stuff, mm-hmm. It's much more interesting to them to hear, you know, what I have to say. But I still wouldn't stand up and say, hi, I'm Sufie, I'm a marketing coach, or I'm a speaking coach, or I'm a publicity coach. You know, all of those things are true, but that wouldn't get me any clients or any customers. I would have to stand up there. And yes, it's true. I had, when I used to go actively to networking, now I do more online, but when I used to physically go, I actually have a little recipe box. I took 4 by 6 index cards and just scribbled little, what I call infomercials on them. And they were all different depending on what I was trying to create that day. So one of the things I would tell your listeners, if you're going to a networking event or if you're going to a meeting with a prospect or whatever it is, right? Now, it's mm-hmm. different if you're talking to a whole room or you're talking one-on-one. I tend to teach, like the program that I teach, 30 Seconds in the Spotlight, is not so much focused on the one-on-one as some of your sales listeners might, you know, be interested in, because mm-hmm. one-on-one really has to be so interactive and so much focused on the other person. Whereas when you're standing in front of a room full of people, like if you go to the local Chamber of Commerce or the local BNI or whatever it is, it's really more of a mini show, like I said.
Right.
So it depends what you're doing. But if it's a mini show, then you have to really figure out what one result do you want that day? Maybe maximum two, like a backup, downsell version of that. But you don't want to go there and say, hi, I'm a graphic designer, so I can help you make your website or your brochure or your business cards or do layout for your book, or I can help you with social media or whatever. Because, first of all, the audience doesn't know what to do with that, right? Number mm-hmm. one. Number two, they're filtering you out because it's so boring they're not even hearing you in the first place. So how are you going to penetrate if they can't hear you? So what you do is you go there and you tell a story. The story might be based on your childhood. It might be based, like I told you, litigation lawyer leaves law for limelight. I've had actually a newspaper article with that headline, litigation lawyer leaves law for limelight, because it's interesting to people, right?
Right.
It could be, I'll give you an example if you like. I have 4 daughters. They were born, I'm very blessed, and they were born in 4 years. Talk about empowering women, right? and they were born into my business, right? Because I was a lawyer when they were born, but I quickly became an entrepreneur, so I would involve them in the business. And so one day, she's my third daughter, but it was the 4th daughter who came and said to me, Mommy, I just won the public speaking contest in my school, right? Now, I had heard this 4 times in 4 years from 4 different daughters. So within 30 seconds, I wrote an infomercial for, I don't remember if I was teaching a class or just going to a networking event, but it took me about a minute to write the infomercial, and half of that was getting her permission to do it, right? Because I didn't want to invade her privacy. But so basically, the infomercial was something like, 4 years ago, my youngest daughter, Aviva, won the public speaking contest in her school. 3 years ago, my oldest daughter, Daniela, won the public speaking contest in her school. 2 years ago, my second daughter, Paloma, won the public speaking contest in her school. And today, my 3rd daughter, Riviera, the shy one, won the public speaking contest in her school. I'm Sufie. I'm a public speaking coach. Not trying to, take my daughter's triumphs as my own, but I think the facts speak for themselves. Sufie, mm-hmm. for when you're ready to get noticed, or something like that. I don't remember exactly what it was, right? It just took me seconds to write it. It was based on fact. It was based on truth. But it's a lot more interesting than showing up and saying, hi, I'm a public speaking coach, right?
Most definitely.
I've never really called myself a public speaking coach, and I've never called myself a marketing coach, and I've never called myself a business coach or a publicity coach or any of those things. I just sort of, get up there and talk about getting noticed, and people figure it out for themselves.
You know, it's funny because we do have a little bit of the wide audience effect. Now, granted, we're using the emails that we send out to potential prospects to cast the wider net out there to a multiple number of people with the goal of getting them to bubble up to the top for a conversation. But we also need to focus on that one-on-one conversation. And I remember a story a friend told me one time that he was sitting in his manager's office and his manager was listening to voicemails. For every one of the voicemails that came in where they said, "Hi, my name is Mary Lou Tyler and I'm from XYZ company," he hit the delete key on the voicemail. He wouldn't even go past. There was only one he listened to, apparently, and it was starting with the story. It was starting with getting an end result. It had, I think it had what you were talking about. It was strong. It had color. It had flavor. And I'm not sure about the drama part, but it definitely started differently. And it got their attention.
That's such a good point. And actually, you know, I've been critiquing people's 30 seconds. In fact, I get brought into conferences and teleconferences and all sorts of things just to critique people's 30 seconds. And in fact, that's part of what I do in my business. And one of the most common things, I mean, one of the first critiques I give them is don't start with, "Hi, I'm so-and-so." Because at the beginning, nobody cares. Like nobody, number one, nobody cares. Number two, nobody hears you because they haven't decided yet whether you're worth their attention, right? We live in a, you know, an age where every time we turn around, whether it's in the grocery store on the floor, they're trying to send us a message. Whether you're in a washroom in a restaurant and there's a message on the back of the door in the subway, like everywhere there are messages, right? You go to see a YouTube video, but first you got to sit through their little commercial. So everybody's trying to sell to us all the time. So we've kind of got this defense system where we don't even hear it. And if you start, "Hi, I'm Mary Lou Tyler," or "Hi, I'm Sufit," it's like, so what? What's that going to do with me? Like, I don't know you. And even if I do, who cares, right?
Right.
But if you start with the story, you know, like 17 years ago, I was sitting in the back of a taxi cab, you know, and Sister Mary Catherine was banging on the window. Okay. Now, if you stop me there, don't you want to know what's going to happen next?
Mm-hmm.
Even if you're thinking, I don't know who Sister Mary Catherine is, and I don't even know who you are. But, yeah, right? But our minds, we're curious. It's an incomplete puzzle. You can't just leave me hanging. Okay, I'm going to listen long enough to find out why is Sister Mary Catherine banging on your taxi window, you know? And the other thing I would tell your listeners is start in the middle. Don't start at the beginning. So, "Hi, I'm so-and-so" is starting at the beginning, you think. You know, you're starting chronologically. Or even if you start a story, don't start in the beginning. Start in the middle of the story. So I didn't even tell you why I'm in the back of the taxi cab or who Sister Mary Catherine is and why is she banging on the door. I didn't tell you.
No.
So it kind of forces you to listen at least, even if you're not interested, you're going to listen at least long enough to get that question resolved in your mind. And then if you want, you can turn the channel on me, right? But you're not going to do it before that.
Exactly. I remember listening to you one time when you were talking about, again, being up on stage, and I think you had books, maybe it was your book, that you were at back of the room kind of thing. And instead of saying something to the effect of, "Hey, buy my book," or "My book's in the back of the room," you gave them two price points. You said,
$20
I like you, and $30 if I don't.
You know, it's funny because here's what happened. That was just something that came about once by chance, okay? So usually I tell people, don't be overly spontaneous and don't, you know, everybody thinks you should be spontaneous. You should sound spontaneous, but you should know what you're going to say when you get there, unless you're really, really, really experienced at this, you know? But nobody would ever tell a ballerina to get on stage and just, you know, wing it, right? Mm-hmm. She rehearses. And the more you rehearse what you're going to say or what you're going to do or dance or whatever, the more free you are to then improvise a little bit because you know basically what you're going to do. So I basically usually when I would go to a networking meeting, I would know what I'm going to do. Or while I'm driving over there, I'd be saying, "Okay, Sufi, what do I want to do today? You know, it's 6:45 in the winter in Canada and I'm schlepping to a 7 a.m. meeting and I'm thinking, okay, why am I going? What am I doing? What do I want the result to be?" Right? Because if I don't know what the result I want is, then how am I going to lead them there? Right? So a lot, you know, so maybe the result is I want them to buy my book. Maybe the result is I want them to sign up for my, you know, at spotlightsecrets.com for my free tips. Maybe the result is I want them to hear me in a free tell seminar or whatever it is, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I first decide that. So let's say that day my goal was the book. So maybe I'd say something about the book, but I'd never pitch it. I'd never come and say, "Come see me if you want it." I'd never say, you know, anything about it. But one day, spontaneously, I said, you know what? I said something about the book, and then instead of saying, come see me or whatever, I'll be at the back of the room, I said, you know, I have a handful with me, $20 if I like you, $30 if I don't. Right? It was just something I said spontaneously once. Now, the price of the book in the U.S. is $19.95, and in Canada, I think it's $21.95 plus tax. It's something like $23.05, right? So There's no legitimate way for anybody to pay $30 for this book anyway, right?
Right.
But I just sort of said it as a joke, right? The result was people would line up at the end of the meeting with a wallet open, pulling out money, sometimes 20, sometimes 30, and look at me sheepishly and say, Sufeet, do you like me?
Do you like me, right?
You like me. So what did I achieve in that? Okay. It doesn't become a question of, do I want to buy the book or do I not want to buy the book? It becomes a question of, is she going to sell it to me for $20 or is she going to sell it to me for $30? So I took away the question about whether they want it or not, right? Mm-hmm. And made it a question about how much is it going to cost them. It's just like, you know, Billy doesn't want to go to bed. You don't fight with him about going to bed. You say, do you want to wear the blue pajamas or the red pajamas? We've all heard that, right?
Right, right.
You give him a choice. So it works. And actually, I once had the mayor of the local city come up to me and said, how much for me? And I said, you know what, for you, 40. And, you know, he laughed. And then he bought the book. I didn't charge him 40, but he bought the book.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm sure some of the audience is thinking, oh, Mary Lou, this sounds good, but, you know, we sell into enterprise stuffy corporations. Is this something we can really experiment on in the corporate world?
You know, that is such a brilliant question. And one thing I will say, you know, total transparency here, what can get you the corner office in the corporate world can also get you fired.
Yeah.
So you really have to decide, you know, am I going to play it by the book and kind of be a middle manager and I'll never really get the corner office and I'll never really get promoted, but I won't be fired? Or am I going to really be me and am I going to take that risk? And now I say this from the point of view of having been a lawyer, like I said, a litigator for 10 years, and I have to admit that I wasn't the Sufeet that you're hearing today. I did perform at night, and I did comedy, and I did sing, and all that stuff. But when I was at work, I was not the full version of myself that I've been lucky enough to present for the last 16 years as a coach, right? Mm-hmm. I did wear what they, you know, they make you conform, right?
Yes.
The same thing sometimes happens in corporate. But if you make a decision that you're going to be you regardless of where you are, the chance, especially now, because things have changed so much in the last 10 or 20 years, partially with millennials, you know, millennials don't put up with this crap, you know, that sort of, behold,
exactly.
they just don't. They're brought up, and I won't say it's entitlement, but they're brought up by parents who, like, I taught my four daughters, you shine, you step into the spotlight, you go out there, you don't have to put up with any crap, you don't have to answer any. So they would never take the kind of stuff that maybe their parents would have taken, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, but still, it's a risk. People might say, I'll give you an example. When I started networking, I would go to these networking meetings and I would wear something that stood out, right? Like I wouldn't wear, you know, a gray suit like a lot of the other people wore. I would wear, let's say, an Asian, you know, silk top or something ethnic looking or just something distinct and colorful. And I had these crazy red glasses at the time. And people would say to me, Sufeet, in the first few months, Sufeet, you really should dress, you know, professionally, and you really should speak, you know, more like the way they did, right?
Mm-hmm.
6 months later, within 6 months of networking, which is totally new to me, I'd never even heard of it, right? Of these Chamber of Commerce networking meetings, all these things, BNI, all that, LATIP, never heard of it. Within 6 months of starting to network, they were putting me on stage as the speaker or on panels to teach them how to do it better. Okay.
Wow.
So for 6 months, they're telling me I'm doing it wrong. And then they notice that I get lineups. And they don't, right?
Mm-hmm.
They've been going for 5 or 10 years and, you know, nobody ever approaches them. And so I started teaching them, you know what? You don't have to be that quote-unquote professional. I call it professionalitis. So to answer your question about enterprise and stuffy corporations, in those stuffy corporations are real people, right? A corporation is a body that is an artificially created enterprise, but it's made up of people. And even though people are trying to conform, when they go home, on the way home, they stop for a beer with their friends and they speak in real ways to their friends in a way that maybe they don't in the office, right?
Right.
So if you speak in that real way that they speak when they're, let's say, 10 o'clock at night and they're putting up their feet and speaking to their best friend, if you speak to them that way, you may cut through. You know, you may appear to be refreshing. And, you know, not to get political, I know, you know, that that's not usually a great idea. But you guys over in America now have a president as a result of him saying, you know what, I'm not going to speak the way the other 16 people on the podium speak.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether it, you know, for good or for not good, I'm just going to speak the way I speak, right? Now, I'm not suggesting that you guys emulate that example, definitely not. But there is a lesson there. And people who fail to heed the, like, people are craving an authentic voice so much that even if they don't like that authentic voice, they are mesmerized by it. They can't look away.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned that, you know, we talked about the curiosity as being one of the triggers that in this 30 seconds in the spotlight, not knowing what to say, that may be a way for people to at least stop and notice. Are there other triggers that you use when you're crafting these mini 30-second commercials?
Yeah, there's tons of them. There's tons of them. Okay, so once I went to a networking meeting, everybody stands up basically at these mm-hmm. events, right? So it's your turn, you stand up. Sometimes they give you a microphone, sometimes not. But it's your turn, you stand up, right?
Right.
So what is the most obvious thing you could do to stand out when everybody stands up?
The most obvious thing that I could do?
What if everybody stood up, like before me was a realtor who stood up, and then a financial advisor stood up when it was mm-hmm. his turn, and then a coach stood up when it was her turn, and mm-hmm. then it's my turn. What would be a good way to get attention?
Stay seated.
Stay seated. So I actually did that. 100 people, everybody one at a time stands up. It's my turn. I stay seated. Okay. What have I done? I've created tension in the room. Everybody's up. They're nervous. Like, what the hell? Why is she not standing up? Didn't she see that everybody else is supposed to stand up, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and then I start talking from a seated position. You know, half the people can't even see me.
See
like,
you,
what's going
right.
on, right? Right? That's annoying. But it causes a creative dissonance, right? It creates tension. This is what this is about. What is drama? What is humor? What are all these devices that, you know, if you read Step into the Spotlight, you'll see a whole book full of them. Mm-hmm. What are they? They create tension and they create, you know, they give you attention. So I stay seated. I start talking. Everybody's craning their neck. They're trying to see me. Now I have a good loud voice, so they can usually hear me. But they're pretty agitated, okay? And then in the middle of the infomercial, at a perfectly timed point in this 30 seconds, what do? That's dramatic.
Stand up.
So all of a sudden I took something that 99 other people did. Okay. They all stood up, but it wasn't dramatic, was it? Right.
Mm-hmm.
Because they were expected to at a certain time. Just by delaying my standing up by 10 to 12 seconds out of my 30 and then standing up at an opportune moment, I created drama.
Mm-hmm.
So it just shows you how simple it is, you know, and maybe while I'm seated, I talked about the problem and then I stood up and I maybe talked about the solution or I'm in the middle of a story, whatever it is, doesn't even matter what I was saying. If all eyes were on me because they were looking for me, it's like, you know, you watch a movie and you see a commercial for Sprite and they crack open the bottle and they pour it over the ice and it crackles and all of a sudden you're dying of thirst. You know, you didn't know you were thirsty until you saw that. Well, they didn't know they were thirsty to hear me until I made it hard for them to hear and see me.
Exactly. Right? Yep.
Then I stand up. So that's one device that creates drama. Another one is in the middle of talking to them. So I'm talking at this pace and all of a sudden I'm quiet for a second.
Silence.
There's a pause. There's a staccato, you know, there's a silence. That became dramatic,
mm-hmm.
right? Humor creates attention, stories like we said. Don't do silly things. I see people, you know, I occasionally sing something because I'm a singer, but, you know, people who aren't, they sing a silly little thing. Or so I saw a realtor, she stood up and held up her realtor sign. You know, I see people wearing, there's one guy who, I think he's also a realtor, he made a hat out of his business cards. And to me, like, hokey, silly. Mm-hmm. It might get you noticed, but at what cost? Like, is that going to make me hire you as a realtor? Not so much, you know? So you have to be careful what you do to get noticed. But there are really so many little tricks. I mean, the other little device that I've used when I'm speaking, usually longer than 30 seconds, but I could have done this in 30 seconds, right? So I'll tell them to pull out a piece of paper and a pencil or a pen to write down what I'm about to say, because it's really important. And I'll ask them, what are the 3 D's of marketing, let's say? Okay. Mm-hmm. So, and I'll give them a second to scramble for their pen or pencil, right? Or their computer, whatever they're going to write this down on. And you know, when I tell them to, 90% of the people do scramble for a paper and a pen, because they think that this is, you know, the one, like the Ten Commandments, it's going to be so profound that it should be sketched onto a tablet, right? Mm-hmm. So once they have the pen, I've already made what I'm about to say more important, because they're poised with the thing, right? So then I'll ask them, you know, what's the first D of marketing or speaking, let's say, speaking in public? And I'll let them answer, you know, and one or two will say, oh, good delivery, that starts with a D, or, you know, be dynamic, that starts with a D. And, you know, I'll joke, I'll say, yeah, those are good guesses, absolutely wrong, you know, or make some joke, I get them to laugh. And then I'll say, you know what, the number one D, write this down, guys, is don't bore them. Mm-hmm. Everybody writes it down. It's so profound what I just said, right? why is it so profound, Mary Lou? Because I created drama around saying it.
Right.
Right? If I had just gone straight and said it and not told them to write it down and not told them to get a pencil, they'd say, yeah, I know that. Like, mm-hmm. You're not telling me anything I don't know. Okay, that's number one. Then I say, okay, guys, what's the second D of opening your mouth in public, let's say? And I'll create another silence while they think, and somebody else will throw out something, you know, be dynamic or good deliver, whatever else they say. Okay, and I'll say, yeah, okay. I say the second one is, don't bore them. And then number three is, for God's sakes, don't bore them. And then right away, because of the rhythm in which I said it, so the first one I said slowly, the second one I paused, and then the third one I say it right away, and I say it quickly, and I say it with emphasis. So again, I'm varying how I'm speaking. You can vary the volume, you can vary the speed. And what I did was a trick, you know, repetition. I could use alliteration. I mean, there's so many of these, right? But the one thing that you have to keep in mind is you have to know your character before you step onto the stage. So I know that my persona when I'm in public is, you know, with a lot of humor, irreverent, sometimes a little, not cocky or conceited, but, you know, just like, you know, I'll hold myself a little bit high, and people take it because I use the humor. But if I didn't use the humor, they'd just think, oh, she's full of herself, right? Mm-hmm. But with humor, people accept it.
Right, right.
So you have to figure out what it is for you. And you know, you brought up a good point about quote-unquote stuffy corporations. Mm-hmm. You know what? That's exactly what I faced when I started networking. And they're not always so stuffy. They just think that you're supposed to be that way and they don't know any other way. But the minute you give them, like if somebody eats, you know, broccoli every day and they've never tasted ice cream, they don't know that there are other foods out there other than broccoli. But if you show them a taste of that and how you can still get business, I mean, the reason it worked, listen, if I just went there and was a comedian and they all laughed and it didn't result in anything, they'd say, yeah, she's amusing, but we got to get serious. We got to get business. But when they started seeing lineups to hire me or to speak to me or to invite me to speak, and they saw that I was getting clients, then they had to take it seriously.
Mm-hmm, definitely. So
the same thing in corporations.
And such a great point on the tonality and varying speed, varying the way that you present your information. We have to rely a lot on the telephone for those first conversations. It's not the words necessarily, but it is the tone that gets us further into the pipeline and having further conversations with whoever we're trying to influence or target or move through. So that's another area that I think we tend to be a little bit automaton in our delivery of how we speak to people on the phone. It's just another one of those triggers.
Yeah, and let me tell you a secret, Mary Lou. What I just did, let me tell you a secret. Mm-hmm. That's a good line.
Yes.
Because the minute after I say, let me tell you a secret, or let me tell you a story, mm-hmm. right? The minute somebody says, let me tell you a story, they all of a sudden stop, you know, Facebooking somebody while they're talking to you, because they know they have to give you full concentration because it's going to be a story, or right. it's going to be a secret, or whatever. So the secret, there really is one, Robert Cialdini, who wrote Influence and a bunch of other books and teaches about influence and what makes people pay attention, wrote that, you know, a waitress can get a bigger tip if she, let's say at the end, you know, when the waitress brings you the bill and she brings two little candies on the bill, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then she starts to walk away. Now, there's versions of this you can do on the phone, but this is the example he used, right? So she starts to walk away, and then halfway while she's gone, she turns back and she slips you two more candies. If you do that, according to Cialdini, your tip will be higher.
Yes.
Than if you don't do that. Now, and it will be higher than if you left them four in the first place. So it's not about that you gave them four candies, right? It's about that you gave them something extra, you gave them special treatment, you gave them special attention. So the question for your listeners is, if you're doing most of your sales on the phone or you're prospecting on the phone or whatever, how can you do the 2+2 candies instead of just two up front or four up front? Like, people try to, you know, overload with value, or, you know, show them how good you are, or, you know, to give them all four up front.
Mm-hmm.
The four up front aren't as effective as two. And you know what? Okay, I'll slip you two more. Don't tell anybody. Yeah. I mean, you have to have integrity too. Like, you know, if everybody knows that it's two and two more and don't tell anybody, then you'll get a reputation. So you have to be cautious about, you know, having a bottom line. But it doesn't mean you can't be creative about making people feel that they're special.
And be authentically you in the process.
And be authentically you. Yeah.
For sure. So the book is still on Amazon, Step Into the Spotlight, A Guide to Getting Noticed. I noticed a while ago now, I don't want to put you on the spot here, but a while ago you had a free tip series that my folks wanted to subscribe to your list. Is that still available?
For you? For anybody else, but for Mary Lou's listeners? All right, yes. Go to www.spotlightsecrets.com. Do it right now while you're listening to the podcast. Mary Lou won't mind. www.spotlightsecrets.com. Put in your name and email. A second form will pop up, because in Canada we have very stringent anti-spam rules. So a form is going to ask you to give permission and also your country. Click, you know, enter a second time, and you will be on the list. And, you know, I'll tell you about that in a minute. But the list started out to be a short list, and people demanded more. And so now there's like a ton of great stuff in there.
I mean, it's just, I mean, the lessons from this podcast for my troops for sure are to practice, because I say practice makes predictable, and they all know that it's good to practice everything that we're learning and doing and executing so that we can feel more comfortable, more natural on the phone. But these tips would be great, because I think if we could sit down and write our 100 openers mm-hmm. and have those, we would be so good at that initial call and get those butterflies out of the stomach and talk to those CEOs or those C-suite people or whoever, and get them engaged. I mean, that's what it's all about. You know, we have something really important and good for our prospects that are going to just transform their lives. Well, let's open up that conversation in a way that gets them excited about it.
That's exactly right. And, you know, even though these tips were initially made, you know, more for entrepreneurs in a live setting with a large audience, you can definitely take those principles and adapt them exactly to the situation that you're talking about, and use them really to draw people in. So, yeah, definitely check out that Spotlight Secret series. The book, if you go to spotlightbook.com, it will take you straight to the right place in Amazon, where there's even, you know, more tips about how to do that. And I totally agree with what you said, Mary Lou, and it's kind of a different way of saying what I was saying earlier. A lot of people think that if you rehearse or if you practice, that you're going to sound robotic.
Right.
And it is possible to sound robotic. I've been at a networking meeting where, you know, you're at the scrambled eggs table, and you ask somebody, you know, what do you do? And they start spouting out this canned 30 seconds, okay? You don't want to be doing that. If you're meeting people one-on-one or speaking to them one-on-one, you know, it should just be a short little one-liner maybe, and then get them to talk first. And then once they've said something, you can gear what you're going to say directly back to them. But you'll still get some great ideas about kind of tactics and methods and triggers and all the things that we've been talking about today, humor and just sort of dynamic, delicious devices to keep the people that you're speaking to interested. And the other thing I would say, like I'm sure a lot of your listeners make outgoing sales calls. The other thing you want to focus on at some point is changing, flipping that around a little bit so that the calls are more incoming than outgoing. Like what can you do to become visible and credible in the marketplace so that people actively seek you out rather than you having to chase them? And there are many, many ways, you know, to do that, from speaking to writing a book to, you know, many, many, many ways to do that. But once people are coming to you, they're more or less pre-sold. I mean, you still have to make the sale, but it changes the dynamic a lot. And some of the tips in the Spotlight Secrets can help you to flip that around so that they're approaching you.
Which is wonderful. And I think, you know, we're leveraging and using multiple levers. Outreach is one. We also, referral engines are important to us. So warming up our clients that we're going to be asking them for referrals later on in our engagement together. And then inbound, of course, it's all related, but we really need to master initially that cold to warm conversation to get people excited about who we are, why we matter, why they should change, why us, and why now. So thank you so much.
And that's true. That's true, Mary Lou. Sorry to interrupt you, but you know, so I don't make outgoing cold calls, but the one area where I would do it is to media, right? I don't do it anymore, really, but when I was starting, that's an area where, because I wanted the inbound from the other people, I had to get influencers and media to kind of put the word out. So those calls were cold, right? And all the devices that, you know, that we've talked about and in the Spotlight Secrets can help you do that. So if it can help you do that, it can definitely help with what you're describing as well.
Exactly. And on those multiple channels of on the phone, email, direct mail even, and then now video. So we're catching up to being speakers on video just at mass level.
and interesting you talk about email, because you know what? When I was getting endorsements for the Step Into the Spotlight book, I'm really, you know, blessed to have had, you know, some big heavyweight marketing and speaking and endorsers and publicity. And, you know, generally, I was most comfortable on the phone because, you know, speaking is kind of the most natural to me. So I tried to do that. But some people are just not reachable on the phone, right?
Right.
One of my endorsers I got with a really well-crafted email. And it was doing all the things that we've talked about today and all the things that are covered in the Spotlight Secrets. It was kind of using a joke, right? It was, I had read, you know, the first few pages of his book and made some joke about something he said in his book. And you know what the reply to my email was? It was the endorsement. Like, he already gave me the endorsement,
That's
like
awesome.
Right on the spot. So you can absolutely do this on the multiple channels that Mary Lou has described.
Awesome. So our time is up, but I want to make sure that everyone knows where to go. I'm going to put all the links on Sufeet's page along with her bio. She has online classes. So for those of you who are thinking, I'm taking this to the next level, I will make sure all her contact information is there so that you can start mastering this piece of the funnel for us. Is the key that unlocks that door to more revenue.
Can I just mention one more thing, Mary Lou, if it's all right?
Of course.
I would like to cordially invite you, Mary Lou, and all your listeners to come join my Step Into the Spotlight community on LinkedIn. We have over 7,100 entrepreneurs, influencers, podcasters, media, and professionals and CEOs in that group. I mean, when you look at the list, you'll be blown away about, you know, who's in there. Mm-hmm. New York Times bestselling authors. Go to spotlightgroup.biz and request to join. And, yeah, if I like you, I'll accept you.
I love it.
Tell me, Mary Lou sent you.
Well, thank you again for your time. This is wonderful information. Everybody go out and get that book. It's a wonderful book. I have a signed copy in my library, so I'm very pleased about that. Thanks again. Loved having you on the show.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.